I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
Yeah, how about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I wanna drive.
Just drive, baby.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
Yep, and as we drive to the close on this Friday, getting ready to wrap up another trading week, we are taking another leg up. We're pretty much hovering at our highs of the session. And I was just looking, Jason, at the five-day moves on the Dow, the S&P, and the NASDAQ. We've had quite a rally this week. Yeah. NASDAQ alone up about 6%, 2.5% higher on the Dow, and the S&P up about 3.5%. So a lot of optimism and the risk trade definitely on. So let's see what J.J. Kinahan has to say about it. Chief Market Strategist at TD Ameritrade. They've got $1.2 trillion in assets under management. Actually, yep, got that right. And J.J. joining us on the phone from Chicago. J.J., nice to have you here. Man, oh, investors, yeah, I hope you're doing okay.
Yes.
Investors definitely looking past, you know, still the numbers that we increasingly get on the virus. We just checked in with the CEO of Allina Health, and they are, you know, still on an upward slope when it comes to the virus out there in the Midwest. Investors, are they too optimistic too soon?
Well, I think that the risk is, exactly what you're saying. Right now, it's optimism. It's fantastic. But I think we have a risk to the market in probably 4 to 6 weeks when optimism perhaps meets the reality of businesses perhaps not opening fast enough for people's liking, if you will. You know, you look at the jobs report this morning showing all those jobs being laid off in, you know, restaurants and bars, et cetera, hotels. You would expect that a lot of those will come back, although how long will it take those hotel jobs to come back in the hospitality industry? And, you know, again, so I just think as I look at that jobs report this morning, will it take people longer to get back to work than the market's pricing in right now? And in a market that's going to be driven by, as you're referencing, COVID news, maybe tariff news, you have another factor then in a few weeks, and that's going to be, are we getting back to work fast enough?
Right. And so when you factor all of that in, you know, Carol mentioned and Charlie Pellett mentioned as he was running through the numbers, you know, tech has essentially looked entirely past all the drama and trauma of this year. Is tech sort of the safest place to be at this point generally? And what are some of the names you like there?
Yeah, so I think in general, you know, Jason, tech obviously has been, for particularly the chip makers for the last couple of years, I think have been the big surprise because, you know, all we talked about was they were going to get hit badly when we had tariffs, et cetera. But then you look at a company like Qurvo, Q-U-R-V-O, I don't think I said Qurvo might be something a little different.
But, you're thinking ahead to tonight, JJ. You're still working.
Yeah, exactly.
It's good.
Well
done. I'm thinking about 25 minutes from now.
There you go.
Quite honestly, you know, you look at their numbers today, not only phenomenal, but the biggest thing I thought about that, willing to come out and say, here's what we're projecting, and we're projecting good numbers in a market where people are not projecting. And it's interesting, the one stock that I thought in all these companies that have pulled their projections, there was only one stock I thought got hurt on that, and that was actually Intel. If you remember that morning, they got hurt for not projecting. So it is interesting to me that the chips continue to do pretty well during all of this, and I think that that's where we have to continue to look for leadership.
Is it a good leading indicator?
I believe it is. And because, if the demand there stops, what you're saying is so many electronic devices, their demand is slowing down pretty considerably also. So even though Apple had, you know, the sales there were a little bit disappointing in their recent earnings, the fact is we're still seeing demand overall for what, you know, people replacing devices or buying new devices. And I think that that's a really, really positive sign. Not to say that that's going to be a straight line up also, but as people do get back to work, hopefully you see some pent-up demand there.
JJ, what do you make of a name like Macy's right now? Carol and I were sort of in our chat that we have going back and forth on the sidelines of the show talking mm-hmm. about that one, especially in light of what you saw with Neiman's this week, what you saw with J. Crew. I mean, Macy's is a troubled retailer. It's a troubled company in a troubled industry. Do you stay away from retail at this point?
Right. And we should point out today, right, they delayed their announcement for the results. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw they delayed the results, and actually the funny thing is the stock's up on that news. But, you know, here's what I would say to most people.
It is a $5 stock, though. Let's just remember, JJ.
But that's exactly where I was going is when stocks get under $10 and it's, you know, not on the ascension but on the descension, I think, A, that's a little bit of a warning sign for most investors generally. When everybody in your sector seems to be saying that they're having trouble, and let's face it, most of the Macy's stores, particularly in Chicago and New York, take up some big real estate spaces. It's tough to put the amount of inventory in those spaces that makes them look filled. But on the other hand, you don't want to carry too much inventory, particularly with the swiftness with which you can do things online. So I think they're at that point where they're still deciding what they want to be, and that's not a good place to live right now.
And their stock may be up, but their bonds are tumbling. And, you know, in a case like this, I like to watch the debt markets for what it tells us. I don't know. You've seen market cycles. I don't know. For me, it seems like it's going to be a while before we get back to kind of a normal market cycle with normal factors, normal quote-unquote, you know, impacting it. What's your thoughts? Got about 45 seconds here.
Yeah, sure. I think you're hitting it on the head. I just think our definition of normal is going to change pretty significantly. The other thing being, at the end of the day, you know, talking about this, in times of crisis, you want to go with perhaps lower beta stocks on companies that have a lot of cash. And in this market, we have a 10-year yield, you know, about 75 basis points. You want to maybe look for dividends, at least for a while, until, to your point, Carol, you get more of a feel of what normal will be.
All right. Well, we're going to leave it there. Pave the way for you
Cuervo
to get to that
time.
Cuervo, JJ Kenahan. Great to catch up with you, Chief Market Strategist for TD Ameritrade.
Or soon-ish.
Joining us on the phone from Chicago. Soon enough. Sooner than us, it sounds like.
I was going to say.
We got a couple hours to go. And I'm watching you, Masser. I'm watching you.
All I got is water and tea in front of me. That's all I have.
I've got an apple. I'm staying away from the cinnamon rolls. In any case, all right, we're going to get you to the close of trading. A green day, a green week.
Another leg up.
Yeah. Interesting to see what everybody makes of this. We'll bring you your movers and shakers and that closing bell in just a minute. This is Bloomberg. You are listening to Bloomberg Business Week. Let's continue our conversation with Jamie Metzl, senior fellow at Atlantic Council, former National Security Council official, joining us on the phone from New York City. Also, we should point out the author of Hacking Darwin, now in paperback. So pick that up. It's a great quarantine read, and in part because it does help us think more holistically about where we are right now. And Jamie, you know, something you said the last time you were with us has really stuck with me, and I'm guessing it led directly to this project that you were describing to us around One Shared World, which is we are going to look back on this and say, all right, so how did we change? What did we change in the midst of all this? And so I want to understand a little bit better about One Shared World, like what constitutes winning to some extent or right. success maybe here in the short term?
Yeah, it's a really great question because the world that we have lived in, that we've experienced, that we've loved in many ways, it was cracked and now pieces of it are breaking. I know there are a lot of, we talked about this last time, there are a lot of people who are just sitting this one out like a snow day, thinking we're going to get our old lives exactly back, and that's not going to happen. And so what we need to do is to say, well, what wasn't working, and what can we build back better? And certainly in the last segment, I talked about 1918 at the end of World War I. in 1941, in the darkest days of the war, the year the United States entered, Franklin Roosevelt, who Bob Mood mentioned in your newscast, he was the one who led us. And he did a great job by articulating where we're heading. And that was the year that he articulated with the Four Freedoms and with Winston Churchill, the Atlantic Charter. And it was a set of principles around which we could rally. And then 4 years later, on today, we had the victory in Europe. And so right now, in the middle of this crisis, when people are afraid, we need to say, well, what does winning look like? Your question. And it means that we emerge from this stronger. And if we're all connected, it means that a world where we're having these terrible health disparities, and COVID is highlighting them because the inequality is showing up in the casualty rates. But we're all less safe because of that. We were perfectly okay with 3 billion people in the world living in extreme poverty, and yet what we're realizing now is that we're all connected. So specifically to your question, I think that we need to change the way our institutions function to recognize that we're all connected, and that if it's everyone for themselves, we're all going to be in worse shape. And that doesn't mean we need a communist revolution or a socialism or anything. We just need to have basic equity, basic fairness that will allow people to realize their full potential, because of those 3 billion people who are living in extreme poverty, how many of them, if given half the chance, would invent the medicines that would save our lives, the machines? And so I just think we need to think differently about what it means to be part of a community and what responsibilities come with that.
So if I can follow, if we put out a poll, I'm sure if you ask people, do you agree that everyone, there should be basic equity, basic fairness for everyone? I bet, I'd like to believe, and I'm an optimist, that most people would say yes. But the process of getting there, you know, maybe some people might have problems with it because some people might have to give up something that they've gotten used to. And I just do wonder, just to dig a little deeper, Jamie, is how do we get there? What would be the first step you would take, or first two steps that you would take in providing a more equitable and fair world?
So let's just start with here in the United States, which is where we are. And you have to keep at with all these questions. You have to ask why. And you kind of start with some kind of why at the end of the tale. And when you ask more and more whys, you arrive at the other side, and that's the real issue. So in the United States, we have a system that is becoming more unequal. And the reason is that when people become wealthier, when groups become wealthy, they're able to play in the political process more. They're able to hire lobbyists to fight over changes in the tax code and these little things that most people don't pay any attention to. And over time, those inequalities magnify, and then you have situations where there's a whole group of people who are locked out. If you see the world as us versus them, then you say, well, that's too bad for them. If you see the world as us and us, then it changes. You look at immigration. There are so many people who are against immigration. You know, how many of our biggest companies, Google, Intel, are founded by immigrants? And so I just think it's on a national level and on an international level. As I was saying before the break, for us to think that we have a responsibility to help the most vulnerable populations in the world, that's not charity. It just means that my health, especially in the context of a pandemic, is only as well protected as the most vulnerable person in the Central African Republic or Bangladesh or what. So we have to change the way we think.
Yeah.
We have to change the institutions around that. But the thing is, it's not charity. We're all going to get better and stronger. And that's it's not inevitable that society be completely organized as it has been. As a matter of fact, there's a lot that's broken, and we're suffering from that. And here in the United States, you know, we failed in our early response to this pandemic, and we're dying because of it. We've got to do better, and we're all stakeholders in making those kinds of changes.
All right. Well, a note of optimism to end on. Jamie Metzl, we always love catching up with you. Always a thoughtful way to go into the weekend. Jamie Metzl, Senior Fellow, Atlantic Council, former National Security Council official, author of Hacking Darwin, Carol.
And I'll put it on Twitter, but check out One Shared World. It's certainly provocative, and it will get a good conversation going, maybe at your dinner table tonight or your next Zoom meeting with friends. You're listening to Bloomberg Businessweek. Coming up, we're talking about streaming.